Welcome to the West Coast Project podcast for Orange is the New Black. My name is Mike.
And I'm Michelle.
Hi, Michelle.
Hi, Mike.
Take two. Just to work out that way. It just worked out that way. Looks blue, tastes red. Hey, Michelle, I did some research on Piper Kerman between our last episode and tonight.
Oh, fun.
I found out that she was in a relationship with Alex in 1993, and Alex was a dealer, a heroin dealer for a West African drug dealer, and Piper Kerman's job was to launder and move the money around, and she ended up in a jail in Danbury, Connecticut, not in New York.
So she actually laundered money too, not just
I guess
the suitcase like we've seen.
Yeah, I guess. So they might have simplified it a little bit. But she did an interview on NPR with Terry Gross last year in August. And here's a little bit of that interview.
So you were sent to Danbury Women's Prison in Connecticut, and you were in a section of about 200 women. Would you describe the actual physical place? Mm.
It's a heavily fortified building with a vicious-looking razor wire fence around it. And then there's the prison camp, which sits outside of that horrible razor wire fence. The building itself sort of looks like a 1970s elementary school. It was built to house Watergate prisoners, the men at that time who were sent to prison for their involvement in the Watergate break-in. And it's a cruddy old building, and the ceiling leaks, and the entire building floods every time that there's a heavy rain. And the thing that is really striking about every prison I've ever set foot in is just the incredible drabness of the physical landscape. So prisons are generally built out of cinder block. They're painted gray or beige. And it's just all hard surfaces, linoleum floors. And so one of the things that's so striking is that it is cacophonously loud in prisons everywhere. Sound is just always bouncing off of metal, off of concrete, off of linoleum.
So that interview goes on. I'll put a link to it in the podcast notes. And there's another interview with Terry Gross from Jenji Kohan about the way that she put the show together on another NPR broadcast. And Jenji Kohan calls Piper the Trojan horse for the story. And I think what she means is that she wanted to write a story about women in prison, but you can't just dive in about the Latinas and the black women and, you know, how the race relations are and all that. So she kind of used this perky blonde girl getting hung up in the court system and going to jail as the Trojan horse to get in on that story. So that's another interview. I'll post both links to
yeah, that's pretty interesting, because I told you last time that I'm reading her book, and I was thinking about it, and just hearing her, I was thinking, I don't listen to books on audio, and I don't know why, because I obviously enjoy that and enjoy podcast type things. But as I was reading her book, I was thinking how great it would be to have that on audio, to hear her story, to hear it. So hearing her voice has made me really want to do that. I may have to see if that's out or something, because I was, you know, it just seems like it's a great story anyway. It's interesting anyway. And I think to hear it told by her would probably even have more meaning. So,
yeah, she sounds just like Piper Taylor Schilling, whatever her name is.
That's what I thought.
So in the episode, we see another flashback, this time of Tasty at a black adoption festival. Tasty's a pretty cute little kid. What do you think? She's what, maybe 9 or 10 years old in the scene?
If she is, she's really smart, 9 or 10 year old. She knows pi to the 53rd or 50. Something. 50 something. I mean, you know, she's a really smart little girl, and she's trying. I mean, my heart really kind of got captivated by this little girl and by the grown Tasty and by her story. And I kind of felt her sadness, and that she, all the kid wanted was a family. And she tries really hard she tries overly hard to impress the adults. And I thought it was moving. It was very sad.
And well, then, you could go to a black adoption festival and adopt some black kids.
Mike.
Yeah, she's pretty smart. She knows the whole periodic table, and she knows pi to like a 50th digit. And but she meets V at this black adoption festival. What did you think of a thing called a black adoption festival? It's kind of weird, huh?
Well, I really didn't think much about it, but I don't know why. What did you think?
It just seems like more of a personal thing that you seek out a child and research adopting her versus a fest, like put them all out in the big festival and then we'll pick one.
Yeah, I mean, I've never heard of an adoption festival, but I don't know. I just thought I hadn't never heard of one. I didn't know, but it was so sad because she's talking about how the people just want the babies and stuff like that. And all she wants is a family and to be loved. And I think that played out a whole lot in this season. But yeah, we meet V, and she's praying on Tasty. She's praying on children, and she kind of sucks them in, it seems like, into her drug, she's a drug dealer, distributor, I don't know. I don't know if I know the difference, but she brings these children in.
She's she's a connect. She connects buyers to drugs, so.
Yeah, and she's getting them to do this stuff, and it's like she's, from what I could gather, she's taking these children that are needy, that have nothing, and want this family connection, and she's bringing them in, and she gives them attention and love and that kind of thing if they do a good job for her. Remember the little boy came up and he handed her some money and she said it feels light, and he goes, Navi, it's not light, it's just big bills or something. She goes, okay then, baby, I'll see you at dinner tonight or something. And it was like, oh, that's just, it was heartbreaking.
Yeah, she plays on their loneliness and gives them a family of some sort that they lap up.
Yeah, but you believe her. I don't know if this actress is just that great. I believed her time after time after time. I believe the stuff she's saying to these people as far as, I mean, and I can see what she's doing. But she has this charisma or something that really was drawing these people in. And I totally bought it because every time she'd say something, maybe I wanted to believe her. But I did. I mean, even though I saw that she wasn't telling the truth. So I thought that was.
Yeah, she looks a lot more like a madam than like a mama. But she comes through as a mama, I guess, to Tasty on the park bench. And Tasty, like you said, she's just looking for her forever family. And I guess V is the forever family. So what did you think of the job fair? They had a job fair where they had to practice clothing and acting for interviews and stuff. The mock job fair.
Yeah, that was kind of set up as a, you know, they're starting and have been kind of digging into where the money's going. And that was one of their things where they were saying that the money, you know, one of the expenditures maybe or whatever. And I kind of got the feeling that was one of the reasons that they were showing it to us. And another reason that I think they were showing us that was because Tasty, when she was sitting on the bench talking to V, she was showcasing her business smarts, for lack of knowing how to put that better, in a little kid. But she was talking about the things she wanted, and she was a smart girl, and she was going to go places and stuff. And so she had these real high aspirations of a business life.
And well, she had confidence. Yeah, I didn't get that she wanted to be a business lady on the park bench. Maybe I missed it, but she had a lot of confidence.
If it wasn't there, it was somewhere in there. She was talking about how she would have a young guy bringing her coffee or something. I can't remember what she said, but she was talking about how she was going to be somebody.
Okay.
And she she wanted that, and it was like the opportunity was, the only opportunity she ever had was to be with V, which was so sad.
So at this job fair clothing display, they run the gamut of every type of clothing. It's basically, it's a bad mix of crappy clothes without having been dry cleaned and bad taste is the way I saw it.
Why would they even bring those clothes? Why would you give anybody that option?
Well, because some of those women probably would have picked those clothes to go out in job interviews in.
Yeah, but come on. I mean, if it's a job fair, I mean, let's give them some good options of how they should dress. I mean, I guess I kind of see, but the lady was, she kind of manipulated it, the lady who was doing it, and had them put on clothes that they wouldn't have put on, and that kind of thing, and then kind of humiliated them once they got up on stage with it.
Yeah, she did, but I mean, that's the lesson. If it was a row of pantsuits, and they all had the same nice-looking thing, there wouldn't be a lesson there.
Yeah,
I think
I
some of those women, if they had their ways and they could have picked off that rack of clothes, would have picked some of that trashy crap for an interview. But anyway, that starts out. We jump around between it, and it's really hard to remember all these girls' names, but they all get kind of a little bit different piece of clothing. And you're right; they are a couple of them are set up to look bad.
Yeah.
So also an interesting thing was the guard that wanted advice for a real interview at a medical supply company.
Yeah.
She wants the hell out of there.
Yeah, she said just hypothetically.
So then we jump over to the kitchen, and Gloria is leading the kitchen now. And she's actually a pretty good leader. She stamps out these little fires that flare up between the people. And we see Luscek, the repair guy slash prison, I guess he's a guard slash repair guy working on the heater.
Well, yeah, he's the guy, remember, who's over, what's that area that Piper and all them work in, construction or something, or electrical, or I can't remember, that mechanical area.
Yeah, it's cold in some parts and too hot in others. So
yeah,
too hot in the kitchen, so they're getting them to turn the heat down. And we find out that Daya has really bad constipation, and Gloria, who is her mentor slash mother, kind of her boss, I guess, helps her with some wild concoction to help her with her constipation, and that immediately puts her in conflict with Daya's real mother, who wants to be the one who helps her feel better. What's her real mother's name?
Daya's mom's name is Alita, right?
Alita, okay.
Yeah.
So they go back to the job fair, I think, after this, unless there's something else in the kitchen that you thought we were skipping over.
No. Then they actually went to the job fair. Before that, they were just getting ready for the job fair, right?
Yeah, they were trying on the clothes.
Right. And so this is where she, you know, it's pointed out that she kind of had set them up, and she's kind of mocking some of them. But I guess you were right, because she did let some of them try on, like the girl in the white little sailor dress and everything, and then she's like, it's childish, and you wouldn't want to wear that. So you're right about that.
Yeah, she thought it was cute. The girl thought it was cute.
Right.
So, yeah, right. But you're right. We were talking a little bit about why are they even doing this job fair, and it's Figueroa's spending money, it's kind of embezzling money that should go into improving the prison, but she's keeping the money. So she's throwing up this cheap-ass job fair, which doesn't cost anything, to make it look like that's where the money's going to improve their education and chances of getting a job and all this bullshit.
Yeah, so that's what I thought. I wasn't sure, but that's what I was thinking. That was,
yeah, Figueroa is siphoning money out of the deal. We also learned in the kitchen somewhere, maybe it was in the second job fair show, but Flaca, the girl, the Latina girl, her boyfriend deals Molly, the drug Molly.
Yeah, I heard that.
They bragged about that, like he's a good, mm-hmm. he's a good supporter, he's a good boyfriend.
Well, right, because they were saying that she didn't need to get a job anyway. She didn't need to do good at a job fair because her boyfriend had it, you know, had everything under control. He was one of the what, biggest Molly dealers or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's when Luscek says, he's telling them what, he was telling Gloria what Molly is. And she's like, why aren't you in here or something? So.
Yeah. So the woman running the show does say, you know, some of you look too childish and some of you look too risque, I guess.
Yeah.
And they do, really. They look kind of stupid. They have, Leanne's wearing a stupid peach colored, she looks really dopey.
But she put her in it. She told her to put it on.
And then who's the transgender guy, girl? She's wearing something way too outrageous for any kind of job interview.
Well, yeah, but she knew. She knew it was ridiculous. You know, she even said it. She's like, I don't care. I just want to show off my assets or whatever. So,
yeah,
I think she knew it.
The only two that look relatively normal are Tasty and who's
Flocka.
Well, the other girl in the black pantsuit looks okay, too. The girl who...
Nikki.
Nikki, yeah.
Yeah.
They're all wearing black, for one. They look kind of neutral color-y, but Flocka doesn't look that... Her outfit is pretty stupid looking, if you think about it. It's like a black checked dress with black nylons and but she's of course got the teardrops tattoo, so she doesn't look very presentable anyway.
Well, and the black lipstick too, so
yeah, and the eyelashes. All right, so gosh, Michelle, we're having a hard time getting on track with this thing, but it's my fault because I was like, it's Saturday night here and it's, I don't know, just out of sorts, but let's plow ahead here.
Well, then we go to Tasty. She's outside. She's standing outside, and she's standing outside talking to a friend, and she's grown up a lot, and V comes up. She's still not part of V's circle. She's still in a home, right? And so she's standing outside, and she's going to a job. She has on some kind of little outfit, like a, you know, a polyester outfit to go into a fast food restaurant. And V comes up and invites her to go out to eat with her and her little posse of her little group. And Tasty turns her down. She's like, you know, no, she's not going to do it. And she's insulting to V, and V, you know, tells her that if you keep acting that way, eventually people are going to quit asking you. You can just say no, thank you. So...
Right. Yeah. Tasty has a crappy job at a place called Storky's Burgers. And V is totally working her like, hey, we're all going out for a nice dinner. We'd invite you, but you smell like rancid oil. So she's just like jamming her in front of everybody, making fun of her. And we start to see a little bit more of this guy, RJ, who's the friend that the boy that likes Tasty.
Right.
I don't know. Do you think he was her boyfriend or just her friend, or was she old? She was old enough then to have a boyfriend, I guess.
Yeah, I think so then. But
RJ was the kid who came up on the park bench when Tasty was 10 with V and brought the money to V.
Was it the same kid? I thought it was, but yeah, I wasn't sure. Yeah.
He looks really tall and grown up now. Tasty's probably, what, 16 or 17 now?
Yeah, I just thought they were friends, but I don't know. You know, I just took it that, well, at this point, they're not really anything, I don't think. He just tries to talk her into going with them. And she, you know, she says she can't. She tries really hard to avoid this life of crime. And she just can't get a break, it doesn't seem like.
Yeah, they're more than friends, though, because they're now at least 6 years into this V family deal. You know, quote, air quotes around family. But they're the posse that V has put together. To
no,
network
Tasty's
her drugs.
Not with her yet.
Oh, but
Tasty's still in the group home or wherever she was living.
But she's in the neighborhood of V, and the,
right.
She runs in the circles if she's not literally
right.
Working for V.
Right, right.
So yeah. So have we ever seen a flashback of Tasty as a kid before? Before this episode?
The only thing I remember, and I don't even know why I remember this, and it may not even be right, but I remember something about flashing back to her working in a chicken place in season one, because that's the only thing I remember about flashing back with Tasty.
So, back in prison in real time, Red is out of money, and Chang can't sell her shit. Can't sell her anything from the commissary without money.
Yeah, and she, Red doesn't understand why, so...
And I want to ask you a little bit more about Red, but we see some more scenes here about the heaters being messed up because the guard leader Caputo has frost on his plants and he's all unhappy.
On his succulents.
Well, Luchek's running a scam on the space heaters. He's going out and buying them for $20 and telling the people that they cost $40 or whatever and getting reimbursed for the more money. And so...
dinner for two at Sizzler.
Yeah, so Caputo right away says, okay, here's $3, and you get me one, and I won't rat on you.
Mm-hmm.
And so... so that we see that. And then we see this disturbing little scene about Boo and Little Boo with the peanut butter. I hope she never did that peanut butter trick with that dog. They don't ever say that she did, for sure. But she just says it got weird. And it's basically she's putting peanut butter on her fingers and her dog's licking it off her fingers, and it gives her the idea that this could turn into some sexual thing. But they don't ever show it, thank God. And they don't ever really say if she really did it. She just said it got weird.
I think I just left that scene out. Nothing written about it or anything. I think I just kind of...
It's really short. It's like less than a minute.
Yeah, I saw it, but... okay.
So, Michelle, what do you think about... Okay, we know Healy's a guard leader and Caputo's a guard leader, right? Healy's like a counselor guard and Caputo's like like the boss of the guards?
That's what I think, yeah.
How do you rate Healy and Caputo? Which one do you like and which one do you dislike?
I like Caputo. I don't like Healy. I want to like him. I keep trying to like him. I keep buying into the stuff he's saying and doing. And then he, after season 13, or season 1, episode 13, what he did and how he turned his back with Pennsylvania and Piper, that's hard to look over. Why? Do you feel differently about him?
Well, they both trick us. Like, they make it look like Healy's a really nice guy. He's going to help these women out. And they make Caputo look like a dick, but then they show Caputo being nice, like he lets Piper use the phone, you know, and they make him look nice. But then they're both creepy too.
But you feel bad for Healy too, because see, we've gotten a big backstory on him with his Russian mail order bride who's waiting her 2 years before she can get her green card and leave him, and. He's lonely, and
but that's because of the way he is. He's
sure it is. But you still feel bad. I mean, you know, my heart has went out to him a time or two, but he keeps coming back with this. I don't even know how to describe what he does, the things he does, you know. And then later on, he does the groups where he's trying to get everybody together to talk because I think he thinks it's going to be helpful to him, and we'll get into all that. But
he wants them to like him. He wants the women to like him.
Is that what it is?
I think he's doing that so that they like him more than he really wants to help them. And Caputo, I mean, Caputo's just doing things that are nice for these women, and then he masturbates right after it. Like, that gets him off. And they're both single. They're both, like, non-relationship dudes. They're, like, it's ironic that they work around women all day in pretty intimate, you know, situations, and they can't develop relationships with women.
That is interesting.
So anyway, I just thought I'd get your input on that. So back at the kitchen, how did Red? Okay, Red used to run the kitchen. Red's the Russian woman,
right?
How did she lose the kitchen to the Latinas?
Remember, Pornstash was trying to bring the drugs in through the kitchen, and she could not abide the drugs. And when he got taken down for having sex with Daya, he gave that nugget of information to Daya's boyfriend. What's his name?
The Bennett. Guard?
Bennett. Yeah, Bennett. To kind of elevate him. He told him that there was going to be drugs coming through the supply company into the kitchen. And then that got Red taken off. Even though they didn't believe Red did it, they believed her, I think.
Yeah.
And somebody had to fall. Plus, they had been looking the other way when she had gotten in her pantyhose and her face creams and whatever. So they knew that she had been doing some stuff. And then suddenly there's drugs mixed in with it. And the girl died. Remember the braided girl who died and all that. So,
but so in real life, Red's husband and her had a restaurant or food business of some kind that was connected into the Russian mob. And they got that connected into the prison. When Red went to jail, they got that connected in so that they could bring in good food and stuff to the prison.
I think even before that, I wasn't sure what mob or what, but she was connected with some people. She had, remember, she smacked the guy's wife. She, like, pushed her in the chest, and she ruptured one of her breast implants. And so then the family, like, owed this family because she had lost her temper and done that. So she had brought up to them that you to get some kind of distribution on a government thing and mentioned, I don't remember what all she mentioned, but that's how they ended up getting into the prison to begin with before she was even there. And then once she got there, she automatically kind of had an in.
Okay. So anyway, now Red's eating her food alone. And
well, they finally give her food. Remember, she had went through the line last time and they wouldn't give her food. That's kind of like the women's punishment in there.
Yeah,
the,
she did that to
Piper at the beginning, right. And so they finally gave her food and they, you know, and the Latino women are back there saying that she's like a big red Russian bear and she's just hibernating till she can gain her strength and she's going to come back. And they're saying all this, of course, in Spanish. And they're talking about her as they're handing her her food. They don't trust that she's not going to, you know, want to come back and take back over because she and her group used to be in charge of the kitchen.
So she is finally getting her food, though. And then we see Pennsylvania for the first time with her glorious teeth, or non-teeth, I guess. And Taryn Manning is Pennsylvania. Have you ever seen Taryn Manning on like a TV interview or in real life, Michelle?
Yeah, I have never met her in real life, but yes, I've seen pictures of her and she's stunningly beautiful.
But she seems just like Pennsylvania in real life. I think I saw her on Letterman or somewhere, and she just seems as daffy and as dopey as Pennsylvania. And I don't think she's terribly beautiful.
I think she's really, really pretty. There's some pictures. I've only seen her in photographs. I've never seen her speak outside of this that I can recall, but she's really, there's some pictures of her that are stunning. They're stunning.
Well, so she's stunning in this scene.
Well, you got a point.
And the next we learn, Healy's learning Russian because, like you said, he's already got the Russian. He bought the Russian wife and she's over. Because she was in season one.
Yeah, she's been here and she just despises him.
And that the girl guard Fisher brings Pennsylvania into him after she had spent a month in the shoe for, I guess, the fight with Piper from last season.
Right.
And Pennsylvania says she's never felt more saner after solitude. Solitary, she probably meant. Healy tries to simplify the whole fight. Like he doesn't want all this bad stuff happening on his watch, right? He doesn't want to look bad.
Well, he walked out there and saw it. It's not just looking bad. He knew that was going to happen, and he watched Pennsylvania attack her. And Piper was yelling at him. She has a weapon or whatever. She's going to kill me. Help me, Mr. Healy.
So why did Healy let that happen?
Remember, he was mad at her for, and I don't remember exactly why that time. Yeah, she had just gotten out of shoe because he had put her in there because her and Alex were dancing together or something. And Pennsylvania said that Pennsylvania was mad and she was always trying to get him in trouble. And so she had went to Mr. Healy and said that Piper and Alex were doing homosexual activities, or however she put it. And so he put her in shoe, and then Larry and everybody started saying things to get her out, you know, petitioning or whatever, calling or at least to get her out of there. And they kind of made Healy back up.
Yeah.
And he didn't like that.
So Healy, at this point, does want to simplify the whole thing. He just wants it to be a fight. He doesn't want it to be that he let Pennsylvania in to almost maybe kill Piper.
Right.
He wants it to just look like a fight.
Right.
And Pennsylvania knows that she has a little bit on him. I guess Pennsylvania's reason for being in jail is her right to life movement, and she killed somebody or something related to that, right? She was on Greta Van Susteren, and
yeah, she had went to have her like sixth abortion, and the lady inside there, inside the abortion clinic, insulted her and made some smart aleck comment to her about, you know, you should get this one free, you know, buy five, get the sixth free, or some smart aleck comment to her. And she went out to the car and got some kind of gun and came back in and like shot up the place or whatever. And so she had no kind of attorney and, you know, nothing. And then the right to lifers came out in her defense and turned her into a, you know, a hero for having done that.
So next we see Figueroa is meeting with the reporter. This is the reporter that met with Larry last year, not too far in the past, right?
Right.
He wants to get the goods on what's going on with all the money discrepancies in the prison. But he doesn't know if it's Figueroa yet. He's just talking to Figueroa. Or maybe Figueroa is talking to him to try to head it off, I guess. But all this Christmas pageant and readers to readers and Dress for Success, it's all a cover-up to show. It's all these stupid, silly, superficial things Figueroa is doing to show that she's spending money.
Well, yeah, because the problem started when they were supposed to have built a 6,000-square-foot gymnasium for these women that evidently Google Images or something never showed them breaking ground on, but they had the funds or whatever for. So that's what got him interested in it. And then I guess the other stories and stuff like that that he's hearing. Now he's just started digging around, and so he's trying to find out more stuff.
Right. And Figueroa's husband is Jason. He's running for state senate. And Figueroa's trying to just blaze this reporter guy with hotness that she doesn't really have. She's sitting on her desk and crossing her legs in front of him, and she dresses really well, but she doesn't look very hot.
Yeah, I don't know if she's supposed to. The way she kind of, I mean,
she thinks she is.
Well, this character, sure, but I mean, you know, I think that's how she's supposed to play it, though. But the hair is always kind of like crazy high and big, and I mean, I don't know. It's just kind of funny how she does that. I think she's pretty, though. But it's funny how she, particularly in this situation, wants to use her sexuality in this, and that's funny.
Well, she's got like a hawk face. She's not that pretty. She's got a real sharp face.
Mike, I think she's pretty.
Michelle, who can't say a disparaging word. So we go to the laundry room, and Angie and Leanne are kind of talking about they're mad Pennsylvania's back, or they're at least kind of saying that it was nice and peaceful without her around.
Yeah,
mad about the contest of the Dress for Success.
Oh right, because Leanne was saying that she had gotten put in that
and set up.
Been set up. So the other girls could win. And she was saying it was set up, essentially, I think is what she was saying, because they told her to dress like that and let the others, you know, have the others dress differently. But, yeah, and then they start talking about how calm and quiet and peaceful and easy and everything it's been since Pennsylvania's been gone. But they don't want her to be told that because, you know, I think they kind of fear her. She's almost like their leader.
Yeah. Have you ever seen either of these women with their teeth looking normal?
I haven't. Only Pennsylvania.
You'd think they would get warning, you know, a good preview of what's happening by Pennsylvania, but their teeth are all moldy and yellowy. And
well, that's from the meth, right?
Well, yeah, they're on the path that Pennsylvania's. I know she got beat up, but they all have the same crappy teeth.
Yeah, that's supposed to be like meth mouth, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so next we're in the steam bath, the Groupon gay steam room with Larry and his dad.
yes, we are. Larry asked him why he takes him to a gay steam bath, and he's like, "Yeah, what? A schwitz is a schwitz." And it's like, that's so funny. He's like, "It's clean in here," and then he finally admits, "Okay, I had a Groupon."
Right, and Larry, of course, goes, "Oh, well, that makes total sense." While guys are having sex all around him.
That was a great contemporary moment in it, though. Didn't you think?
This was a little bit to me like the Boo and Little Boo that I cringed. I wanted it to end. But it was interesting in that Larry's dad thinks Piper's an idiot because she rejected Larry's love and his, you know, Larry's dad's advice as an attorney. But he doesn't see that Larry's a loser as a romantic partner. And he's telling Larry to get on with your life, go get a new girlfriend, get into the groove again.
Right. He tells him to distract himself because, you know, Larry's going back and forth about how he's a good guy and all this, and Piper cheated on him. And then he says, you know, says maybe I should just get on with my life and that kind of thing. He's kind of taking it back and forth, but his dad's really egging him on to let Piper go.
Well, he's doing more than Larry's extolling how his greatest boyfriend attributes are. Like, he's a great guy, gives Piper orgasms, and
he did say that, yeah.
So we see Flocka now in the back to the prison. Flocka's learning how to interview from the guy. B-Wise is, I guess, is another consulting team that comes in, and Arthur from B-Wise is talking to Flocka and how she should say, don't say no one stole shit. Say, I monitored the inventory and prevented theft or something.
Yeah, he did that with all of them, and it was really good how he did that. It was Flocka, and then Nikki, and then Tasty, and Tasty loved him. She was really getting into it, so.
I think Flocka's one of the prettiest girls in there, but she's just, her look in the show is just so bad. She's really pretty, though.
Yeah, have you been, like, on any Facebook pages or any of that of Orange is the New Black? Because these women dressed up and looking different. I mean, I finally finished season 2, and so I'm not scared to get on the Facebook pages anymore to see any spoilers. And man, they are so pretty. I mean, they're just so, there's not a one of them that's not just beautiful. They're just so good.
Well, anyway. Post the links.
Okay.
Taylor Schilling's really pretty. Piper.
They all are. You would be so surprised when you see some of these women outside this garb and this, I guess, the character that they put on.
So this guy, B-Wise guy, is talking to all of them, and even Poussey. Poussey wants a job where she can just chill.
Yeah.
She's not very motivated.
And Boo wants to be a umpire, a women's umpire.
Yeah.
And Crazy Eyes wants to work with round things. She finds them very, very pleasing. It was so funny. It was just one after another. And this guy's just sitting there taking it all with like a grain of salt. I thought it was pretty good.
Well, the Boo chick wants... Didn't her thing come out that she should be a pro athlete, a park ranger? Or is that...
No, that was Nikki.
Nikki, what? Okay.
No, was it?
Yeah, that's Nikki, or a correctional officer.
Yeah, that was Nikki.
So we find out, too, Morello, Lorna Morello wants to get married to, that's all she wants, to get married to her fiance, Christopher.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to find out that's going to not work out exactly how she thought.
Oh.
And have babies.
And you love her. Don't you just love her?
She's an idiot.
I know, but you don't know that.
Yeah, you do.
You don't know it at the beginning. I mean, she's just like the sweetest thing from the very first day. She has her little bride magazines, and she's looking at all this stuff, and she just always has a kind word, and she's always so encouraging, and then you find out she is Looney Tunes. So.
Crazy Eyes wants to work with mentally ill children. You know what? Crazy Eyes... I feel sorry for her because she's typecast for life. She just is. I mean, she's a great actress, Uzo Aduba. But she, I mean, what would you do if you saw her behind you in line in a restaurant or something? Look at her Twitter or Facebook. She just looks like crazy eyes. You can't get that out of your head when you see her in her normal life.
She plays the role. I mean, you got to give her that. She is, and I've seen her kind of grow into it. She was good at the beginning, but I've seen her really grow into it and take on this character. And she's one of my favorite characters on here for sure.
Yeah, so they had some other weird thing, like the nun Ingalls is supposed to go into the fashion industry, even though all she's done is be a nun in a prisoner.
Yeah, she said she's never worn anything but a habit and a prison uniform, and, you know, fashion industry might be out of her league a little.
And Tasty has poetic inclinations.
Because she raps well or rhymes well, what'd she say?
Yeah, well, she's super smart. I could see how she would... Anything where you have to think and be creative, she would be good at.
She is, and she's a talker, too, and she's a go-getter, and she's very forward-thinking, and kind of goes back to what we were talking about before, how smart she was as a kid.
So next we see Red's son visiting her, and he's been beat up with a bag of change by his girlfriend, I guess, his baby mama. Not his wife yet, but he, I guess, is Red's only reliable child because she starts telling him about not having money, and he relays to her that the store's empty, they lost the prison contract, and the other two kids, Yuri and Maxine, are just kind of loser kids that don't really want to care about their mom and her fate in prison. So Red gives this kid, I don't even know if I caught his name.
Mm-mm, I didn't.
But she gives him a little shit for, like, stand up, don't get beat up by your wife. But she knows that he's reliable because he will come through with her. He cares enough to visit her, for one thing. He's there with her.
Yeah, well, she's actually telling him not to make her mad, that, you know, he should marry her. She's a good woman. You know, what? She's calling the woman who hit him his wife, and he's like, it's not my wife. And she's like, well, what should I call her? You know, my grandchild's mother, what should I call her? She's kind of giving him crap about it, I thought.
Yeah. So who are these other people? I've seen them a couple other times, too. It's the daddy who's sullen and doesn't say anything, but yeah, and the mom's all cheerful and happy when he comes in with the baby.
It's the girl who gave birth in season one. She was the one who was pregnant in season one. Her name escapes me at the moment. You're right, there's a lot of names to remember in this, but that's her baby that she just had. We just saw her go through, you know, be pregnant and then go through the labor and stuff with it. So,
yeah, if I didn't write these names down, I would be. This is Game of Thrones level to me.
Yeah.
So we see those two, and then we see that Tasty wants a real job with Judge Joe Brown if she can get through this contest and win it and get the job. They think there's a real job at the end of it as a prize at this point.
Well, Tasty tells them that there is. She says that's what she heard from last year. The girl who won it last year went on to have a job with the company or whatever. So yeah. She thinks she's actually going to get a job.
Pocono Campo won it last year, Michelle, because she needed that name.
God, another one. No, I didn't get that name.
And so Tasty says she's a child of the system. She pretty much is a child of the adoptive system.
Yeah, she's a child of the system. She never learned right from wrong. That's what she tells them because they're saying, why didn't you tell us there was a real job? You know, we would have done things differently. And that's when she goes, I'm just a child of the system. I never learned right from wrong. She kind of used that. But she gets them to support her because they want her to win.
Yeah. Hey, did we see V in season one?
I don't remember V from season one at all. No, I think the first time we saw her was episode one, season two, I think.
So we see now a flashback of V and Tasty, and V's front, the business, is like one of those UPS stores, package stores.
Okay. I didn't get that.
Yeah, she's shipping stuff and shipping supplies. And V has fired Tasty for something. I didn't catch what.
Tasty hadn't worked for her yet. Tasty's in there saying she can't take it at the group home anymore. She can't take... that's what I'm assuming she's saying. She can't take it where she is anymore. And she's asking V for her help, meaning she now wants to come on with V. And, you know, V is like, no, that ship sailed. I don't think that's what she said, but something to that effect. And then the guy came in.
Yeah, okay. Remember?
Yeah, who owed V money and still wanted to get drugs from her.
Right. And so V and Tasty really gives him a dose of, like, business math of even drugs. Like, how what you need, you know, she just adds up all the numbers of what he owes and what he needs and if he can sell it and what the VIG is and all that, and V's pretty impressed by.
Okay, what's a VIG? I don't know what that is.
It's like, if you borrow money from a loan shark, say you borrow $10,000, you got to pay him back $12,000 because the VIG is 20%.
Do you know what it stands for?
Vigorish.
Okay.
It's the interest. It's the abuse of interest in a criminal.
Oh, okay. I have no idea.
And then it's usually, you know, it's not like you go to a bank and buy a car and you get a loan and then you pay back 8% a year or whatever, 3%. It's like double. It's like the vigorish is like, you owe me, I'll lend you $10,000, you give me $15,000 at the end of the week. You know, it's like bad.
But Tasty could add it up really quick and in her head, and she kind of talked V into going ahead with the guy and giving him that. So he had, I guess, the opportunity to make the money back, to pay her back or whatever. And she ended up being an asset.
She knew about the criminal operation because while she was throwing around all those numbers of what he owed her and what he was going to owe her if she gave him more product, and she only gave him 50% and he made X amount of profit. But then Tasty was the one who said, and there must be some VIG in there, right? Like, she knew there was a criminal element of extra.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. Yeah.
So that might have impressed V more than all the math manipulations.
Right, but it's like you said. I mean, you know, she hasn't been with her up to this point, but she's been around. And she's been around it, and she's, I think, known what's going on.
I thought she had fired her or something. So she was just crying because her other thing wasn't working out?
Yeah, I think she came to her because she was tired of living in the group home, and she wanted to do something different. I think she was saying that she just can't be there anymore.
Yeah, okay.
And so V, you know, I mean, at first she was cold to her until Tasty kind of proved her worth.
So back in the prison, Daya's mom, Alita, steals some yogurt and stuff from the fridge to cook up this laxative for Daya, I guess.
Yeah, evidently Daya is lactose intolerant or something, and because when she was young, every time she had yogurt, it would cause like a diaper explosion. So she wouldn't let anybody give Daya yogurt. So she thinks that this is going to help her with her problem, with her constipation problem.
Yeah, it's a good theory.
Yeah, that should work. Why not?
So now we see more. This show is just a stream of people I don't like. We see Larry and Polly now. Polly is Piper's friend, and Larry's helping her out for some reason.
Yeah, her boyfriend, I mean, Polly's husband, Pete, has went on a month-long vision quest to the tundra or something, and she has this three-month-old, I think, baby, and...
No, it's a kitten.
No, it's not a kitten, because she is, like, just, you know, going around. She has her shirt undone, and Larry comes over, and he's just like, you know, Larry's like, what you picture as being more conservative, maybe, and all this, and he comes over, and Polly's just sitting there with her, you know, with her breasts hanging out, and
she looks really unappealing too. She does not. It's not like you catch a glimpse of a woman's breast and it's like exciting. She looks just haggard.
Well, I mean, she has this baby she's been caring for pretty much around the clock by herself. She makes a point that she, you know, hasn't had a shower in 3 days, and you know,
well, she does. She does say that she's the UPS guy's new favorite stop.
Right.
Because they're just walking around breastfeeding all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So they talk about Larry and Piper breaking up, and Polly's sympathies are somehow with Larry.
Yeah, because she never liked Alex anyway, and she didn't like the whole relationship.
But she likes Piper, right?
Yeah, she's Piper's best friend. She's the one that they had the business with. She didn't like Piper's relationship with Alex.
So she feels sorry for Larry because of that.
Well, because they got back together, yeah, in prison. And Piper cheated on Larry with Alex.
Yeah, I don't know.
She sides with Larry in this. But basically, I think she just wants a friend, and she hands the baby over to Larry before she drowns him in her tears and sweat. And she goes take a shower and gets in more states of undress as she's going. And, you know, you can see his eyes just like
everywhere, but
all over.
I don't know if they merit that much attention because she's just creepy. She's
creepy. Who, Polly?
I know she hasn't showered in 3 days and she's a new mom and all that. She's tired. But she's not nice, you know? She's not attractive. Like, I mean, her body's okay, I guess, but she's just not, as a person, she's not attractive.
Well, we had talked about it last time a little bit about Piper's friends, and this was, you know, like her friend when she was a kid, who was kind of bossy and kind of pushing her around, and then we've got Polly here, who's kind of bossy and kind of pushes her around, and I mean, we've seen this relationship between them and how they are. Remember,
Polly didn't even take her phone call either.
Right, that's what I'm saying. She wouldn't even take her phone call from prison because Piper had to drop the phone and go chase a chicken in season one, and so it just made Polly so mad that she wouldn't even answer the phone when Piper called for a long time. So there's definitely some contention between them. But at this point, I think Polly just wants some help. Her husband Pete's gone, and she just wants an extra set of hands there. I don't think she was trying to be sexual with Larry there. Did you?
No, I don't know. I don't even care. That's maybe it. That's my point, is I don't really even care about the relationship because I don't like either of them. Like, you don't ever think, like, ooh, I hope they get together. They'd be a good couple to watch together.
Well, but you can't think that. Even if you thought that, you can't think that. Because
yeah, you can.
No, you can't. That's Piper's fiancé,
so,
and it's
what?
Her best friend.
That happens in movies all the time.
I know.
I don't know. I just wanted the scene to end, though. I didn't care about any of their interaction. The only thing I thought was interesting is there was kind of a tie back to the Daya having the need for a laxative because Larry was bringing over dark beer for her to get her milk to come.
Mm-hmm.
And so to connect back to that, we see Daya and her mom got Daya.
That reminded you of a laxative?
Well, the food to induce something else in human function.
Okay.
I was just trying to get out of this scene with Larry and Polly.
Okay.
But Daya does get her to take the yogurt. Daya's mom gets her to take the yogurt, and then she's bugging her in the bathroom, which would be horrendously obnoxious to me.
Yeah, that's probably not the time to have that conversation.
But it looks like it's working because she has like 3 or 4 empty yogurt things at the sink, and
Daya's giving it her best shot for sure.
Yeah.
And then we see Poussey altering Tacy's skirt for her. So we know that she's really going, because that was one of the negatives that the mock job fair woman had said, was that Tacy's dress was a little too tight for the full-figured woman. And so Poussey's altering it for her.
Yeah, so Poussey's pretty nice.
Yeah, and they're talking about how they're like sisters. And they're really close and everything.
So Tacy really wants this gig because she's reading up on interviewing skills, and she's not just winging it. She's putting some effort into it.
No, she wants this. She thinks this is going to get her a job, and that's what she's always wanted. The family, the forever family, and the job. So this is her goal with this. She's taking it really seriously.
Yeah, so I guess the next scene we see is the V and Tacy flashback with RJ at the kitchen table.
Mm-hmm.
And V has sent Tacy out, or Tacy went out on her own, I guess. But probably got sent out, though, to get the stamps for the heroin.
Yeah, I think she was sent out to do something. I don't remember what, and she got kind of sidetracked at a craft store, she said, and she ends up with a bunch of pipe cleaners and all these rubber stamps, and they're kind of trying to talk V into stamping the heroin and giving it like its own little insignia or whatever.
Right. And so they have a nice little family scene there of RJ and Tasty waiting for dinner, and V's making bread and soup and stuff for dinner.
Yeah, it's like homemade bread, and she's having her taste it, and Tasty's standing there, and she's just, you know, just beaming with this family unit that she has now.
But Tasty does come up with a pretty good little idea about the horse for heroin stamp. So she does have a little bit of business acumen for branding and finding a way to market and, you know, kind of give V her own label and stuff.
She's a smart girl. We've seen it time and again. I mean, I'm not surprised at all when she comes up with good ideas and stuff. She's very, very smart.
Yeah. So she's starting to feel like part of a family, mm-hmm. which is what V knows she really needs. So
that's right.
Back at the prison, we see Red with the old, what do they call the old ladies?
Yeah, I can't remember. I haven't heard it in a while, and I tried to find it, and I can't remember. But the older group, the silver-haired group, comes up and joins her when she sits down in the cafeteria this time. They had invited her to join them last time, and she just kind of said, no, I'll just stay over here. It's quiet. But this time, they go up and join her.
Is it the Golden Girls?
Yeah, maybe it is.
Because of the show, the Golden Girls. So, Red is reading and still not eating, really, right? They're just kind of keeping her company. And they kind of tell her that she needs to dye her hair.
Or not. You know, they say, you know, you really don't have anybody to impress. Who are you trying to impress? You know, and then Red kind of thinks, ooh, I've kind of let this go, because she doesn't want to be a member of this group. She doesn't want to be looked at as one of the older women. They talk about how they're invisible. And, I mean, it hasn't been but a month ago that she was running this place.
Yeah.
And so now she's kind of on the back burner with it and everything, and she's not really ready to settle down into that yet, I don't think.
Well, she's not really as old as them either.
No. No, I wouldn't think.
It's kind of funny, though, because the one crazy woman says she's 23, and Red says she looks pretty rough for 23.
Yeah, no. Bless her heart. Didn't you love her? Did you love her?
No, Michelle, I didn't love her.
I loved her. Oh, my gosh. I loved her.
So, Pennsylvania and Lorna are going to the oral surgeon.
Yep. Pennsylvania is giddy. She has talked her way into new teeth, and she's wanted new teeth since before her teeth were messed up. And man, they show a shot of her mouth, and kudos to costuming in this, because wow.
It's got to be just like one of those mouth guards that you bite into and it looks all funky.
And it did. That was rough.
So what do we see next? We see, Philip Morris now is in there doing a job presentation with a guy named Mr. Sloven.
Right. I think that was it. Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's a representative of Philip Morris Tobacco. And they didn't even know, I don't think, you know, who was going to be speaking. Well, I know the audience didn't know who was going to be speaking that day. They were expecting a guest speaker. And it was this guy, and they were they were not totally impressed.
You'd think, though, if you were in prison, you'd be happy with any kind of guest speaker that would have anything different than a normal day-to-day dronery that you go through. But, yeah, you're right.
Pretty interesting, too.
Pusey and Black Cindy are putting down this guy because they don't like cigarettes and they don't think they have good race relations.
Yeah, well, yeah. And Black Cindy says, you know, that she doesn't think Philip Morris is the evil company because people can smoke if they want to, and the real evil is the companies that kill us without our consent. And then she starts, you know, naming off all these companies, and it's like, wow. So she's more thoughtful about things than I would have imagined. I just wouldn't have even imagined her thinking anything like that. You know, this character, she just seems kind of giddy and silly and all that. And then she's really thinking these intense thoughts.
So they're making them all deeper. They're filling them out really, really well.
Yeah.
It is a lot more, like we said, the Trojan horse. You know, she's in the prison. Now she can write the story about all the people in prison. She's really accomplished that. Because we do see all these, you know, first we might have only cared about Piper because she was the Trojan horse. But now you really start to care about all these women, even maybe more than Piper.
Well, and did you notice that we don't even see Piper in this episode at all? She's not even in it. And did you know, I didn't even notice it until like the third time I had watched it. So if that tells you anything about how much I care about the other characters and stuff.
Yeah, well, that's kind of what we were saying before in the other podcast, is that the time of Piper is over. You know, the story of Piper has kind of been told. And now it's, if this season goes on, it's not about Piper, it's about the women in prison. And we start to see a few new faces in this season. So it's not going to really be Piper's show anymore. I don't think it's going to be a kind of the exploration of characters and how they evolve and, you know, under this pressure cooker of prison.
Yeah, and with the backstories and stuff, it's really good.
So, Flocka and Tasty are the interviewees by the Philip Morris guy, Mr. Sloven. And Flocka's just shamelessly flirting with the guy. And Tasty is actually super professional. She knows the company background and the financials, and she looks good, and she's just really together.
Yeah, and she just has that perfect smile. I mean, this would be her, it's definitely a shining moment for her, and she really puts it on and does a great job with it. And she nails it from the start to the end. Everything she says is just, it's perfect.
And Flocka's, you know, her attributes that she espouses are like, I'm not ever late, and
Hussein
from the audience is like, you were late this morning. Mm-hmm. You were late coming to this thing. Mm-hmm. That was pretty funny. But Flocka's just flirting. She puts her hand on the guy's knee and stuff. Did you ever think that the guy was going to pick her?
No. No. I would have been... I'm disappointed a lot in the outcome. Not in the show, but in the things they show us on the show. And it would have been another disappointment. But no, I did not. The way he was looking at Tasty and stuff and his smile toward her and everything.
What is this room that they're in? They have like a stained glass window, almost like it's a church window.
Yeah, I think it's their chapel room, isn't it? Their religious room or something. Yeah, I think so. Like an auditorium.
So our next flashback to V and RJ and Tasty is just RJ and Tasty. It's just a picture of RJ because he's been murdered or killed. And they're on the way to the funeral, I guess, or the ceremony for him. And we find out that V kind of says he's gone. He's not gone. He's just not in that body anymore. She's putting kind of a religious gloss over it. And that she had warned him not to carry his piece at night, his gun at night. And that the cops claim he was armed. And so that's apparently what happened, is he got shot by the cops being somewhere at night with a gun. And Tasty's really sad about this because she and RJ, as brothers / boyfriend, girlfriend / business partners, whatever they were, had plans. They had plans to see the Statue of Liberty. And it was a little sad. It was a pretty, you know, pretty touching scene.
Yeah, I'm having a hard time saying anything without saying anything because I did just finish episode 13, the last episode, so that kind of brings all that back and ties it in together, so we'll just kind of leave that where it is. But but V is very comforting to Tasty, and she promises to protect her, that she let one of hers slip through and she'll never let it happen again and all that. And you know, it's another one of those situations. I mean, I want to believe her. You know, I know what kind of person she is. She's shown us again and again, and I want to believe her. I want to believe her for Tasty.
It's interesting to me that they were in either Danbury or Litchfield, New York, whichever one you want to pick, but they had never seen the Statue of Liberty, which would not be very hard to get to from either of those eastern places.
No, but I mean, yeah, you're right, but she was a, you know, she was a group home kid. So it's, I can totally buy it. That's just, it just showed another level of how lacking her childhood was and her raising was, and how she never had anybody to do that kind of thing with her for. And I thought it was just horrible.
Yeah, for that to be a life plan, that's like a very low level life plan to see something that's less than 100 miles away from where you already are. But it's sad because they never got to do it.
Really sad.
So back in prison, we learned that Daya had her laxative worked.
Yeah, she finally goes, and Gloria and Alita are both in the bathroom with her, and they're excited for her and congratulating her.
Yeah, because she took a really big shit, like right in front of Bennett, and he's like, oh, what? Bennett's an idiot, but it still makes Daya really embarrassed.
Well, right. He comes in and he's like, what? And they're like bragging to him. And she's like, you embarrass me. And she goes running off like anybody would, I guess.
Yeah, it is embarrassing. And then we find out that Tasty wins the job. And so here it was Flocka who said, whatever, I don't even smoke. She didn't even care. And then they learn that there is no job. Instead,
well, right,
from, and that's Figueroa. Horrible.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and not only did she, because Tasty goes up to her and asks her, you know, hey, what about this job, and what do I need to do, kind of what's next, and you know, Fig's like, you people, that's all you ever think about. Give me my prize. Give me my cookie. I mean, she's just horrible to her.
Well, she's right. That's how they all are. But they're made that way by this terrible system.
Well, I mean, I don't think that's necessarily how that was in any way. She was working towards something, and there should be something to work toward, no? And there should be something at the end. You don't get up and work hard.
Right. But Tasty was working hard, but, you know, 90% of them, or more, the majority of them, of the other prisoners are like that. Like, what do I get? Give me what I get. What are you going to give me? You know, it's not a very good, the system created that, though. It's not like, I mean, Tasty has defeated the system a little bit in being so proactive in trying to get this quote unquote job.
I didn't like the way Fig was, like, scolding her and just, you know, just, I mean, she's just so off-putting. She's off-putting every time she opens her mouth, almost.
But she's unattractive, yeah.
That was so horrible.
But she gets $10 in her commissary fund.
I know. And, I mean, that was even almost sadder than nothing.
I don't know.
I mean, I guess. I mean, maybe that's something, but she thought she was going to be in. Look, this is her life goal. They kind of showed us that this is her life goal, is to be this business person. She has this head for business. And she just interviewed with one of the heads of Philip Morris. And she nailed the interview, and they loved her and all this. And what does she get? She gets $10 in her commissary.
Well, that's a lesson there she's going to have to take, too.
I think she's had enough lessons.
Misplaced expectations. So, but V sees all this, and the scene kind of ends, the episode ends. Where was V during all this time?
I think V was just brought in.
So right? V is new to the show right now?
It's either right, yeah, I think she is right here. I think she was just brought in. She's in orange, and that's the first time Tasty has seen her for sure. And they show her bringing her in, don't they?
Is there a meaning to the color, like you're orange when you're first there?
Yeah.
And then you get khaki or whatever?
Once you're assigned to your sleeping space, then you're in khaki. And before that, you're in that, like the five bunk rooms or whatever.
Yeah. Why did they not let you sleep in your bed that they made your bed and you slept on top of it?
I think because of the inspections and stuff, and if they came through and the beds weren't made exactly right, then everybody in the room got punished or whatever. So they just made you sleep on top of your cover so as not to mess up your cover.
So you don't trigger an inspection.
Right.
All right, Michelle. Well, that we fought our way through this one. This was like a bad timing one. We usually do this in the morning or sometime in the midday. And right now it's like, for you, it's midnight on Saturday night.
Yeah, it's kind of late.
And
but we're just trying to get it caught up. I want to catch up at least a few more and get up to episode 3 or 4. And then we'll be back on our regular schedule of one a week, right?
Well, I was thinking we should go back and review episode 1 again. No, it's good. We'll catch up. Episode 3 is Hugs Can Be Deceiving. It's the 16th one in the series. And, of course, they're all available for anyone to watch on Netflix. And I've seen them all. You said you've seen them all now?
Yeah, just seen them all. I'm still kind of reeling from everything I saw in the end. So, yeah, I did finish it, though.
So next week we get to see the new hippie chick.
So-so.
Yeah, what's her first name? Brooke.
Brooke, mm-hmm.
She was pretty funny, I thought.
Brooke So-so. See, I can remember names of the people, of the new people that they bring in, but it's just all the people that they started with. I know when we did True Detective and I printed out the cast list, and Fargo, too, because I always print out, like, the full cast list, and it has like their pictures and their names. And True Detective and Fargo both were like 2 or 3 pages, and this literally is like, I don't know how many, 12-15 pages. I mean, it's just page after page.
What are you talking about? You can get it. How would that be more than one page?
Well, because they do pictures and like little it's the IMDb, I think, cast
just
list.
Go to Wikipedia, you'll have all the main characters.
Well, yeah, but I print them out, and as I'm watching it, I kind of look at it and try to keep up with their names, because they say their names sometimes really fast and it's hard to catch it. So,
you know, iPad has you can do closed caption. You can probably do it on PlayStation and computer too. Closed caption's really good for catching stuff that you would normally not see.
I do it on when I'm watching it on my phone, which I do in bed a lot of times.
While you're driving?
No, I try not to do that while I'm driving.
It's too hard to text and watch while you're driving.
Not me. I'm safe.
All right, Michelle, that's it. See you next week, next episode.
We'll see you next time.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye.